Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking about human resources with people that are getting it done out there. So let's get to our guests because we have a lot of things to talk about, I'm sure, today. So, Lori Rudiman, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Hey, thanks, guys. I'm happy to be here.
So, if you would, introduce yourself, and then we'll roll into, kind of jump into your world and roll into what's top of mind today.
Well, that sounds good. Thank you for the opportunity to be here again. So I am Lori Rudiman. I would like to remind everybody that I am SPHR certified. I think that's really important on a show like this, right? And
yes.
I'm just a, absolutely. I've been it for over 11 years, so I'm really proud of that. And I'm a writer, speaker, and consultant. And there is no real face of HR ladies in America, and so that's kind of my mantle. I'm the HR lady on the internet, right? So I answer advice questions, and I talk about human resources on my blog, which is The Cynical Girl.
Well, fantastic, and you definitely you attack the content. And I love that. Love the spirit of your voice actually on there because it's kind of no bullshit and that's refreshing. So,
yeah, thanks.
That and a quarter, and with inflation, we'd be at 21 cents. So
right. So, I'm not making any money by having a bullshit or no bullshit attitude. Right, that's not what pays the bills. What pays the bills is writing and speaking and doing all that kind of fun stuff. So, what do you want to talk about today? We've got all sorts of stuff happening in the world, right?
Ooh, got some big stuff. So
let's
jump on the one that definitely jump on the one that has dominated. This week, kind of good and bad, depending on you know, which side of the question you're on, or you know, not too many neutrals, not too many like eh. It's literally like wow, or I, you know, the world could be coming to an end. So, Supreme Court got a little pub this week, pretty big decision. So, you know, what are your initial thoughts and impact and, you know, all that good stuff?
Well, you know, the Supreme Court actually had two opinions this week that I thought were interesting and both kind of intersect the world of HR and work and money and power and politics. And the first one was the Voting Rights Act. So they struck down a provision of the Voting Rights Act and called it unconstitutional. And in certain states, like the one I live in North Carolina, there are a lot of conditions made to help minority communities get out there and vote and register. And the Supreme Court basically said, yeah, you know, that's working. That's giving everybody equal access to, you know, casting a vote. We're giving everybody the franchise, but it's unconstitutional. So they threw that part out. And that's really top of mind where I live in North Carolina because voting is so important, especially in these minority communities. And people really struggle to take time off of work and to balance work and life and get to the polls. And on top of that, we have a lot of history here in North Carolina of people, quite honestly, being disenfranchised. So I thought that was really the first interesting, you know, result from the Supreme Court this week. And then the second one, which is really two, both the Prop 8 and DOMA ruling, are also really interesting because I think love is love. And I think equality is good for America. It's good for democracy. It's good for capitalism. And nobody is going to die because two consenting adults love one another and want to marry. So for me, that's like, you know, a very important way that I live my life. I believe that love is love. But there are a lot of businesses out there that still are scared of the homosexual agenda and don't want to be told who to hire and who to employ and who to socialize with. And I'm going to tell you something. Those days are over because equality is here and it's growing. And I'm just so proud of the fact that Domo was struck down this week. So it was on whole a pretty good week.
Yeah, I agree. I'm based out of Oklahoma, so I don't even know if, I'm not even sure where that conversation started. I mean, I think we might be one of the two states that, like, literally 77 counties, two presidential elections in a row carried one party both times, all 77 counties.
Yeah,
so,
I believe it.
I think we're so far past disenfranchised in some respects that I don't even know. It's hard to start.
Yeah, right.
So, but
but it's interesting to me because HR professionals aren't very comfortable speaking about politics very often. And I think, the Voting Rights Act, equal protection under the law, love being love and recognized, and how that impacts Obamacare and some of the federal rules, this is all very much related to what HR professionals do on a daily basis. But again, many of them are very scared to talk about it because they don't, want to cause conflict in the office, or they don't want to offend anybody. And you know what offends me? Bigotry, bias, right? So from my perspective,
yep,
Let's have that conversation. I'm ready. I'm there.
Yeah, it's a weird, and again, it's a really, really tough subject here, like in Oklahoma, because it is definitely, much like North Carolina, I mean, it's very, very religious state. Historically,
right.
That's a common conversation, which, I've coming from metropolitan areas to here, I mean, I had to get used to.
That's right.
But
yeah,
at the end of the day, it's really uncomfortable for people to talk about, especially when you get into same-sex benefits. There's been a couple companies that have led the way in Oklahoma that were great diversity and inclusion cultures. And then somebody actually said, a friend of mine works with the chamber specifically on diversity and inclusion and does a lot of things statewide. And so there were people in the organization with them that said, hey, great company, but we have no same-sex benefits. So we're missing like a whole sector that's completely getting discriminated against. And they stepped up to the plate and led the way in the state and, getting that done as quickly as possible, because they had to start from scratch. They're like, okay, we need to get a consultant. We need to get somebody that knows how to structure this to make sure that we're doing it right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, but it's one of those. So, kind of to go.
Well, Brian,
kind of
I don't know about
actually.
You. In the state of Oklahoma, do you have a lot of government workers? Because here in Raleigh, North Carolina, this is a government town, and a lot of HR professionals don't feel, especially in state government or local government, don't talk about politics because they can't talk about it. They're not allowed to. So I get that, and I often hear that from, state workers or federal workers. We're not allowed to interject an opinion. But oftentimes what I find is HR professionals aren't really up on the law or certain statutes either, and don't really know about bigger trends going on. And from my perspective, just because you can't talk about it at work doesn't mean you shouldn't have an opinion and you shouldn't be educated. So I always like to start there with conversation. And whenever I can make fellow HR ladies feel uncomfortable and hit the big ones, gay rights, abortion, civil rights, all that kind of good stuff, I'm in. That's the conversation I want to have. So,
yeah, same thing here. We're definitely a government, a more government state federal contractors with the military bases, a lot of higher education, and then all of just the statewide organizations. It's a considerable amount of the population. And so that's actually a really good point for everybody, just as you navigate through things, because there are some people that are immediate, like, I mean, I can't talk about anything. I can't even have an opinion because, we can't do it. Title VII, so what is the next step, adding, kind of taking this a step further and making it part of protected class?
I wish I knew. I wish I could read the tea leaves. There's a lot of interesting debate around what, basically getting rid of DOMA, what that does and what messages that sends to the state, and then the Prop 8 ruling, and, what the Supreme Court did and really didn't do in that. They kind of punted on that. So still uncharted territories. But I'd be really interested in talking to my good friend Heather Bussing about this, and maybe that's a show, because I think she's probably got a real good sense of what the future is for human resources as the Supreme Court rulings are handed out. So I'll be looking to Heather Bussing. She's awesome.
No arguments there.
Yeah.
one of my favorites.
Yep.
Well, and it's one of those that it's just, I mean, thank goodness. I mean, you can't really, it's the past is the past now. It got struck down and you know, clears the way for the future. But it is pretty amazing that we still have these really kind of like untouchable blind spots that people just hate to go to that are just blatant discrimination.
Right.
So
If it's not discriminating against oftentimes gay people or women or people of color or people with different abilities or disabilities, we now also have a bit of controversy around whether or not fat and obesity is a medical condition. I don't know if you saw that in the news the past couple of weeks, and whether they classify it as a lifestyle choice or a medical condition. And from my perspective, that has also wide-ranging impact on human resources and benefits. And you know how I feel, like wellness is nobody's business but your own. But I also feel that the food supply and the government supply around subsidies and the way that we, you know, subsidize corn and sugar is making us all a little slower, a little fatter. We've got no balance in our lives. We're all eating like crap because we're caught up in this consumer-driven life cycle. So I think HR is a really cool space to be in to start thinking about some of these bigger issues around the way America runs itself, it governs itself, it uses tax dollars. I think it's great.
Yeah, that's the next 12 months, or the next, I guess it would be 18 months, is going to be super interesting because of just some of the precedent rulings that are coming down around this, and then with Obamacare, I mean, all of it. I mean, it's just going to get for an HR professional. You probably are coming up against a time frame that you will not be valued in my lifetime anyway more because of all the things.
Right.
Somebody needing to understand and be the subject matter expert and help navigate things that are changing on a daily basis, what the impact is, because there's no precedent.
Dude, summer's coming up, so it's time to start planning picnics. So let's not forget about that either. Come on.
That's true that.
Yeah.
Got the holiday stuff. Got people getting drunk and peeing on things. And
that's right.
I mean, that's HR, right there.
And then you've got the holidays. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Good old HR doesn't change. Does not change.
Nope.
About this same-sex marriage, Laurie, I want to get your take on this, because in this initial stage, as we know, some employer might agree to this, or some people might embrace, some people might not. So, what do you think? Will it attract more, broader pool of employees, or how this is going to impact the employers in this industry when they're going to embrace or not going to embrace this same-sex marriage?
I think that's a really interesting question. A couple years ago, I wrote about this for the conference board, because there are employers out there that have simply said, in states like New York, where gay marriage is legal, they're now making all of their employees be married, both gay married and heterosexually married, in order to get benefits. So they've completely eradicated domestic partner coverage, and that impacted a pool of employees at those organizations. So I think, you know, you've got the social issues, right? Do I want to work for a progressive or a conservative organization? How does that attract talent? What does that say about my employer brand? And then you start to hit people's bottom line compensation, their total rewards package. And if you're at an employer that previously offered domestic partner benefits and they're now saying you have to get married, whether you're gay or straight, in order to qualify for benefits for your family, that completely changes your relationship with your employer. So, again, we're in uncharted territory, and I think companies are going to start to look at the bottom line and say, does it make sense to, you know, stop providing benefits and move to exchanges? Do we insure certain people and not other people? This is all really super crazy. And not only is it the bottom line, right, it is also employer brand. So if you think about a company like Chick-fil-A, who was in the news last year around the election cycle, they've really had to rethink their position on gay rights and equal rights, and quite honestly what I think are civil rights, because they were taking a hit in the press. not only with their consumer brand, but as well as their employer brand. And they've, I think, moved in a pretty positive direction, so people can start eating Chick-fil-A with maybe a little bit more confidence that they're a little bit more inclusive. But there's a company out there, Waffle House, and Waffle House still says, we are very pro-Bible. We believe in the literal interpretation of the Bible, and that's where our lobbying money is going to go. So I think if you're someone who's progressive, like me, and loves Waffle House, which I do, I love Waffle House, it's a real heartbreaking moment to say, you know what, I'm not going to eat there anymore. That's not where I'm going to spend my money. So
what do you think, how this is going to affect the world culture in an organization, if this is going to happen? When I say work culture, you know, we have a diverse work environment, diverse workforce in an organization. So how this is going to affect, or how this is going to impact their
yeah.
workers when they see that, okay, their employers are going to embrace this?
Well, I'm not sure, because even though it'll be legal to get married in the state of California, based on the Prop 8 ruling, in some places in America, it's still legal to fire people for being gay. So there's this cognitive dissonance in our culture right now where you can be gay married in some states, and then in other states, and maybe even in the same state, you can still be fired for being gay. So there's a lot of, I think, conflict within our laws and how that impacts an employer culture. I think, for example, if you work at a Starbucks or you work at a Google or a Facebook, you know going in the door that that's a more progressive culture. But if you're just working at, like, the Verizon wireless store at the mall, and suddenly you have to accept certain norms that you may have not accepted in, you know, your previous work environments, that might be a challenge. And I don't know Verizon's position, but it could be anything. It could be TCBY, it could be Applebee's. A majority of Americans work in retail and hospitality environments, and a company like Marriott is progressive, but I don't know about any other hotel chain. And suddenly these conversations are going to start happening more and more in the workforce. I think it's going to be interesting. I don't have any insight into it, but I think people are going to have to grow and evolve pretty quickly.
Absolutely. Let me do a quick reset, everybody. Brian and Nisha are talking with Lori Rudiman on Drive-Thru HR. We've got about halfway through the show here. So kind of jump a topic, and you had wrote a post, in the last few weeks, or recently maybe, on kind of motivation, dispelling the myth and what the real engagement drivers are, and kind of call it bullshit that that money is not like the underlying and real core driver when so many people don't have enough money.
Right.
That at the end of the day, if you actually have enough money to not have to go paycheck to paycheck and figure out, exactly how you are going to clothe your family because school's coming up, even in thrift store stuff, when you still have any money, that's a big driver. So my question is, why is it so consistently not that money is not the driver? What's wrong with the whole survey measurement component to engagement and satisfaction? Because I agree with you. I think
I think the fix is in, right? So you have a bunch of companies that want to use corporate budget in a way that really should be allocated to salaries, right? So if my former employer is paying Gallup, $500,000 to do a major engagement survey, that's money that's not going to salaries. So already, like, to be a conspiratorial woman like I am, the fix is already in. But okay, so you have a Gallup, or you have CEB, or you have the Conference Board, or you have all these other organizations asking questions. Oftentimes, they're not asking questions that really apply to real-world American employment situations. And the way that the data is presented to, you know, readers in USA Today is it's as if it's applicable to everybody. So they may poll corporate workers and say, you know, what's your main motivation? And corporate workers may say, I work for passion, or I work for engagement, or I work for something bigger than myself. When such a small segment of the American workforce is actually in that position, most American workers, I think it's 76%, are living paycheck to paycheck. So even if you believe in the Maslow hierarchy of needs, the hierarchy of needs at the very basic level is not being met in America. So there's like this discontinuity between the data and the actual lives that are being lived by real world Americans. And I think there are a lot of real broken pieces in this process, whether the wrong things are being measured, the wrong conversations are being had. But oftentimes, I think the wrong questions are being asked. And the question, do you have enough money to meet your basic needs, is a really important question. And I think you start there versus, you know, what motivates you to come to work? Because that's kind of a stupid question anyway, right? It depends on who's asking the question. That's the way I'm going to answer it. If it's my boss or somebody who's representing my boss, I have one answer. If it's my girlfriend who's asking me why I'm going to work, I may have a completely different answer. So I think the whole process is kind of goofy. And then what comes out of these questions is often consulting engagements, right? So this is a capitalistic process anyway, and everybody wins except...
No, that's solid, because it's...
At the or end, crazy. I don't know.
No, it's at the end of the day, I mean, people talking about, you know, their future usually is woven with, I am happy, but I got no resources to do anything. So I'm poor and happy. And
right.
So if I was, like, if I was middle class and happy, I might not be that much happier, but at the end of the day, I got more resources to do more things to spread my happiness. So I think the wrong questions,
yeah,
are being asked, and the agenda is being driven for the wrong purposes. That's why you have the huge number of dissatisfied, disenfranchised, disengaged workers that consistently comes up every single year.
Every year.
Somebody does
every
research.
Year. Honest to God. And, you know, wages have not kept up with the pace of inflation or with the pace that wages have gone up in the 1%. And so I think it's really interesting that 1% of our country is earning so much money, and they're okay with earning that much money, and then 99% is falling behind every year. And so if we were looking at the way wages should be paid out, if the 99% kept pace with the 1%, the minimum wage would be $23 an hour. Now, is that realistic? Could people afford to, you know, shop at Walmart if everybody's getting paid $23 an hour? What does that do to inflation? There are a lot of economic questions there, and I don't have any of the answers. But I do know that wealth is being hoarded at the top, and it's not pooling down. And when we ask about engagement, we're not really focused on what matters, which is what I think matters: gender equality, pay equality, you know, fairness, you know, racial inequality when it comes to salaries. So those are the things I think that we need to address. I don't really care why people are engaged anymore. Just pay them.
I'm kind of down with you on that. So completely. So you got this speaking gig coming up, and it's with this cat named Chris Dunn.
Yeah,
you know, nobody really knows of him. A complete unknown in the HR space,
right.
I might add. Riding your coattails.
Well, he's been riding my coattails for almost a decade now, so it's about time we both get on stage and talk this out, really figure out who's the king or queen of the HR space. So we're going to do that at Illinois SHRM in August, and we're both really super excited to be there. SHRM, the national conference, was in Chicago this past year, and oftentimes in the state where the national conference is held, people are kind of conferenced out. But I would really encourage people, if you're in the Chicagoland area, or if you're even downstate or in St. Louis or in Indiana or in Wisconsin, to come out and join us in Oak Brook. I think it's going to be a great time, and our good friend Dan Crosby is speaking. I believe Dwayne Lay is speaking. They've got a lot of really great concurrent sessions. So Chris and I are really honored to be there, and we're going to talk about personalities and human resources and really career pathing and development, and we call it the 9 faces of HR. So we're really excited.
Well, definitely, folks, check it out. You can Google
Illinois SHRM.
Saying that, by the way,
right.
Illinois SHRM. It's all right in front of us right now, and you got plenty of time to sign up. I guarantee they can get you in still.
Yeah, I think the early bird runs out soon, but, you know, I may know somebody who can get you a discount. So hit me up, and we'll talk.
Well, that is perfect. So SHRM conference, Chicago. Just got done with it not too long ago. What was the one? Any big surprises? Any one big surprise where you're like, oh my God, that I didn't see that coming, or huh, that's interesting, or that's nice.
Yeah, so I want to talk about Blake McCoskey from Tom's Shoes. I don't know if you've ever worn a pair of Tom's Shoes. You're a self-respecting man, so I hope not, Brian. I hope you haven't worn those shoes. Nisha, I don't know if you have a pair. I have a pair. I love them. I think they're cute. They fall apart really quickly, but he went on stage and talked about conscious capitalism, which is a really awesome concept where you run your company with fairness and equality, and then hopefully you're more profitable. And I think that's been proven true in about 10 to 15 organizations, and then the rest of the tens of thousands of companies in America are still driving down the cost of labor to make money. But I liked it. I think it's a bit naive to say if you just treat people well and with respect, you're going to be profitable. There's a lot more that goes into being profitable, but it was a nice, surprising message to hear at SHRM, because SHRM is usually where HR professionals go because they want to be all businessy, right, and they want to talk data. And here was this nice, kind of cute guy on stage talking about treating people with respect, and I thought that was kind of cool. A little naive, maybe, but kind of cool.
Yeah, the story, you know what, I was really, it's the first time I've heard Blake speak. We're on first name basis, as you can
tell.
Yeah,
I see that, apparently. Nice.
Yeah, it's demonstratively on my part. So, I really enjoyed the story. Bought the book, read the book already, and really enjoyed it, and have thought a lot of things around, like, social, you know, corporate social responsibility. And, you know, what's interesting is I've had the discussion with a few people, and I've had one of my friends who actually had a pair of Tom's Shoes on took it off, and she's like, you know, I totally believe in the mission of this. She goes, but she goes, these shoes are not manufactured in Argentina. They're manufactured in China.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
So I'm not sure how that aligns with the mission around, you know, what they're doing completely. I would like to know that. And
I
so
love it.
I thought that was interesting take. I mean,
yeah, that's really great. Well, you know, they're made lovingly with small hands, I would imagine. I'm sure they're not made with child labor. I'm sure they're not. But the supply chain's kind of sketchy,
Blake,
in China, so.
No, Blake, I know you wouldn't do that. So hopefully
that's
by
right.
The end of the year, we're going to try and get him on the show. I would, just for that, I mean, we got you, so we can get Blake
right.
And there's
right,
no doubt
right.
About it.
Well,
so.
I would like to hear the China connection. You know, it's interesting to me because Apple, right, makes a lot of their products in China, even though they have this wonderful Made in California campaign. And I would actually be okay with buying a free trade Apple product and really paying for the value of what it costs to make it, because then I think we would really have to have a real conversation about what an iPhone costs, what the things we love and the things we need in our society, in quotes, really cost. If we paid what everything was actually worth and didn't subsidize it with cheap labor, I think the world would, you know, of course the world would look differently. That's not like a great thing to say, but I would be open to that. And frankly, I don't need another iPad, so I'm fine with my iPad too. It's all right.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're going to work. That's my mission the next 6 months, is to try and get to his people's people and get him on show, put a little pressure on it, buy some shoes. And no, I don't actually own a pair of Tom's Shoes.
Good. And, you know, they're not
people.
Cheap. They should be cheaper if they're made in China. That's my position now.
They're giving more than 50%. So, but
well, come on now.
yeah. Gotta have some margin there. Capitalism.
That's right.
It's for profit with love. So
there you go. I love it. That should be on a T-shirt.
I'm telling you. Well, Lori, it's been an absolute pleasure. Always a great conversation. Very, very excited about you and Chris getting on the stage for the first time. Long time coming. I think you guys will crush it.
Well, thank you. And congratulations on your Women of HR Month. That was a really great idea. Nisha, if that was your idea, it was brilliant.
No, it was our William's idea.
Ah, William.
Go figure.
He's such a feminist.
He is. I can't even say that out loud. But he is. Uh, he he's a lot of something, and that was a brilliant idea. And, you know, it's one of those that great showcase. We had so much talent on this this month, and thank you for bringing that up. Thank you to everybody that's been on. There's so much talent, but so much female talent, leadership, that we just got to get the voices out there, and we can just solve all the world's problems. It's that easy. Not hard.
There you go. Thanks for doing it.
Okay, folks, we're out of here. Have a glorious weekend.